Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. President Joe Biden arrives in Florida to try and lift Democrats. Candidates ramp up for their final push to Election Day. And former President Donald Trump looks to put his stamp on Florida's election in the closing stretch. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson. And those are some of the stories I'll be discussing today with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, that means it's our final pick a number segment before the election. And boy, are there a lot of numbers floating around. John, what do you have for us today on this election eve podcast?
Zach, you know, it's been a long time since number one has been used in Florida during college football season. But that's what I got this week. My number is one.
All right. Keeping it simple here as we get down to the wire. How about you, Antonio?
Well, I got a sports analogy, too. My number is 14, and 50 years ago this season, Dolphins went undefeated 14 games in a regular season on the way to the Super Bowl. So I got 14.
And Dolphins are looking pretty good again this year. My number is right in between. We all got some low numbers this week. 12.8. I'm 12.8. With an exclamation point, actually. That's a little hint for you. Who uses an exclamation point? Well, Joe Biden's poll numbers aren't great, and he's taken a beating over issues like inflation. But Charlie Crist and Val Demings still welcomed him with open arms this week as they joined hands together at a rally in South Florida. Antonio, you were there. You were covering Biden's visit. Some Democrats have been giving him the cold shoulder this year. They worry about being dragged down by associating with him. Why do you think Crist and Demings are feeling the love from Biden?
Well, Zach, you know, if you look at the polls, they may be asking the same question that Donald Trump posed to undecided voters back in 2016. What do you have to lose? Look, I'm not being flippant. Just about every poll we are seeing shows both DeSantis and Rubio leading Crist and Demings, respectively. And anecdotally across the state, we are seeing a surge in GOP enthusiasm. So maybe aligning with Biden in the presidential bully pulpit may no longer be so risky. Look, the issue, though, isn't so much Biden, but the Democrats' message. They've not had a proactive, engaging message, especially not on the economy. And the most persuasive issue they've had, again, based on polling and voter interviews, has been a fervent pro-choice stand on abortion, but that came to them courtesy of a Supreme Court case. They've had a really hard time connecting on a message on or an issue from student debt relief to COVID policy to the gasoline tax to inflation. Contrast that with DeSantis' simple, steady, and straightforward Free Florida message, which we talked about plenty on this podcast. Look, it's simple. I kept the economy open. We have historic low unemployment, and Florida is the happiest place on earth, except for Biden inflation and the dry queens. This week, I did follow, like you said, the president's visit. His first stop, which got the most attention, by the way, was, you know, a classic Democratic textbook play, appealing to seniors and Social Security, Medicare, and lowering prescription drug prices. Okay, yeah, look, Florida has a large older voter population, and that's an important message, no question. But watching it still felt outdated and stale in a state where a pivotal voting block is the Hispanic electorate, especially in South Florida and especially Miami-Dade.
And Antonio, it was a much different message than what Demings and Crist. I mean, their closing message is all about abortion. DeSantis and Republicans are going to take away your abortion rights. They've been hammering on that. And Biden comes down. He's talking about Medicare and Social Security. Who's more on point here?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think a more varied discussion would be more appealing, especially when you're looking at, you know, the big voter registration growth, as we reported a couple of weeks ago in Blue Palm Beach County, is the purple MPA voters. You know, and we're the fastest growing senior population is in the Villages, which is a very conservative community that is not going to vote blue regardless of a cap on medications. Now, I will say that Biden, the one that the White House put forth was that one talk in Hallandale where he talked about entitlement programs. But then he went to this private fundraiser where he did make a really compelling case on the threat to democracy, which he spoke on Wednesday night in a national TV speech. And then when he went to Florida Memorial College, he gave the speech that he gave the kind of speech that you just referred to that was very varied, and which he actually made a really persuasive case for Democrats about the economy, a really compelling case. The problem is that other than the audience at Florida Memorial College in Miami Gardens, nobody else saw that. So look, I don't really know. You know, it's hard for us to say. The voters will have their say come Tuesday. But, you know, it just seems like that one speech, which if that gotten more attention, I think would have been more compelling. But then again, you know, maybe it's just been far too little too late for Democrats to turn the tide on a potential red wave here in Florida.
And it's interesting the contrast between Biden's message and Kristen Demings here in the closing stretch. He is really focused on the economy. And there have been a lot of Democrats who are arguing and others that are arguing that the party has not come up with a compelling enough message to counter the Republicans hammering on inflation. And Biden does seem to be trying to make that case. I was actually at a Charlie Crist rally in Sarasota on Monday. And even one of Crist's own supporters who was in the crowd, I was interviewing her and I was like, you know, what do you think? What's the most important issue to you? And she started talking about housing issues and the economy. And I said, well, what do you think about abortion rights? That's what Crist is talking about here today. And really, that's the only thing that he mentioned in this speech, which was very short, just a 2-minute speech. And she said, well, you know, that's important. I support abortion rights, but I don't think it should be his main focus. I think that, you know, it appeals to a certain group of people, whereas the economy appeals to everybody. And when I mentioned that on Twitter, I tweeted out a video of Crist's speech, and I mentioned that this one of his supporters thought that he was focusing too much on abortion. Crist's campaign spokesman Samantha Ramirez fired back, and with some polling data that showed that Democrats or abortion is more of a motivating factor for people. So you know they're obviously looking at data. They think that this is the motivating issue for Democrats. But you know whether it's enough is really a big question. What do you think, Antonio? Do you think abortion issue is getting them where they need to be?
No, look, we've heard the same thing, that they're focusing too much on it. And I think this is the big difference between the way the Democrats approach a campaign and the way the Republicans approach one. The Democrats think, okay, the polls say this is our strongest argument. We're going to go with that. Polls say this is our weakest argument. We're going to avoid that. Republicans don't take that tack. They basically, okay, what's our weakest argument? Oh, the threat to democracy, January 6th, let's flip it around. Now, they did that going back to, you know, 2004. Remember John Kerry in the Swift boat, where John Kerry was a military veteran and, you know, and George W. Bush had gone off to the Air National Guard or whatever. And they turned, they became the turn. They Swift boated John Kerry. And I think this is one of the hamstrings of the Democrats in this election particularly, that I think they were afraid to talk about the economy because they saw that as a weak issue. Whereas perhaps if they had done what Biden did the other day and they had done that much earlier, talking about the low unemployment rate, talking about the global inflation, how other countries, like actually, if you look at the U.S. inflation rate, it's less than most developed countries. I mean, they could have turned this around. They could have made a more persuasive, compelling argument. They never did.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, sometimes you've got to tackle these issues head on and try and turn them to your advantage. You saw Democrats do that a little bit. You know, Charlie Crist is talking about freedom. You know, freedom has really been DeSantis's message throughout. And he is talking about the freedom to choose and trying to borrow some of that language and saying that he's really the one protecting your freedoms by protecting abortion rights. But I don't think they've done it nearly to the degree that we've seen Republicans do it with some of these issues. Well, the visit from Biden kicked off a flurry of activity in the final week before the election. Crist also embarked on a statewide bus tour while DeSantis announced a string of rallies in all corners of Florida. Rubio and Demings are also crisscrossing the state in the final stretch. John, what's your sense of where these races stand on election eve? I did some interviews with voters this week and attended that Crist event and also a Rubio event on Tuesday. The vibe I'm getting from Republicans is a lot of confidence. You know, Joe Gruters introduced Rubio at this rally in Sarasota on Tuesday, and he predicted a bloodbath where, you know, Republicans are going to annihilate Democrats. And when you hear from Democrats, like Charlie Crist was telling voters, you know, ignore the polls, don't believe what you hear. It seems like he realizes that his voters are pretty pessimistic, even as they try to project hopefulness.
Well, yeah, that does seem to sum it up. I mean, Republicans seem very sure that, at least in this state, they're on the eve of a massive victory, a clean sweep of all statewide offices and major gains in the Florida House, the Senate, and the congressional delegation. Democrats, I sense, you know, that they feared this was coming. But until the last few weeks, they were somehow hopeful that the theme that abortion rights is on the ballot was going to especially drive women voters and no party affiliated voters to their side, and that there was still enough wariness of the culture issues promoted by Governor DeSantis and the Republican led legislature that voters would rise up and vote Democratic. I think from the beginning, Democrats knew that unseating DeSantis was going to be an incredibly tall task, but that at least they could keep it close. And they thought that Republican Senator Marco Rubio could maybe be caught by Democrat Val Demings, a black member of Congress and a former Orange County sheriff. Some of her campaign themes defy that, you know, defund the police theme that the Republicans like to throw at the Democrats all the time. So, you know, the idea on paper was that black voters would rally behind Demings, and Crist has a good record among black voters, and that abortion rights would drive women voters and no party aligned voters to their candidates. But it just seems that Democrats never got any momentum behind these candidates, a product of the National Party completely ignoring Florida. I still can't really fathom that, just the complete walk away from the state of Florida, third largest state in the nation with a lot of races in contest. But the local Democrats really didn't get any help with organizing TV money and, you know, serious get out the vote efforts. And then, you know, maybe a couple of weeks ago, the wind finally seemed to be coming out of the Democrats' sails with reports of inflation here to stay, you know, gas prices still high and the stock market roller coastering. That seemed to pivot races back to the issue of the economy, which, as we were just pointing out, you know, generally isn't a good place for Democrats right now. At least the argument that Republicans are making seems to be sticking with voters. Though, as Antonio just pointed out, Biden does have some defense and some things to point to. But somehow it seemed like that message was not clearly distilled for voters. And in Florida right now, too, DeSantis, of course, has sent out the bat signal, you know, that he wants a resounding victory. You know, he may even hit a double digit win over Crist at this point, although that may be hard to pull off. But Republicans are hungry for more power in the state, and they're organized and they have the money to be that way. I think that get out the vote efforts are going to pay off on the Republican side. The Democrats have just been losing voters across the state. Some of it is a result of the lack of voter registration efforts here during the 2020 pandemic. The Democrats have really never recovered from that step away in 2020 when Republicans kept trying to get, you know, get out the vote and also get voters registered. Democrats have never recovered. They're like an NFL team that had a lousy couple of years of draft choices, and now they are lacking at making the kind of course corrections that they expected they'd make if those draft picks had succeeded. So here we are. You know, Democrats are still trying in the home stretch here. We've got Democratic senators on a statewide bus tour trying to protect and win some seats. You'll have a good show of souls to the polls with black churches and neighborhoods getting voters out in the closing days of the election. But I think DeSantis has this Republican celebrityhood aura about him right now, and that's really going. His events are well organized and getting bigger. You know, I covered Jeb Bush's reelection campaign 20 years ago, and it had a similar feel with Jeb then, of course, you know, the brother of the seated president and the son of a previous president. It gave him superstar status within the Republican Party then. And its similar feeling seems to be around the DeSantis side right now. So I think DeSantis is getting that attention from the new MAGA Republican Party. It's certainly not the Jeb Bush Republican Party anymore. And there are plenty of Republicans who want to bask in that aura right now and endorse what he wants because they think he might be the next elected president in 2 years. So Republicans have motivation and momentum, and it seems that Florida Democrats have neither. It's going to be a long election night for Democrats, although I think we're probably going to get results fairly quickly, with exit polling probably showing the outcome clear in all of Florida big races very early.
Yeah, could be an early night on election night. It's interesting that you talk about DeSantis and, you know, kind of comparing him to Jeb 20 years ago. You know, Jeb had that star status, and he kind of, you know, the party shifted under him eventually, and he lost that and had a pretty weak run for president. What do you think? I mean, there's a lot of speculation about DeSantis going forward and whether he runs for president. He certainly seems to have just a ton of energy and enthusiasm. When I talk to DeSantis voters, there is a real enthusiasm for him like you don't see with any other candidate, I think, in Florida right now, where they are true believers. They are really responding to his message. He seems to have that connection with his voters, but things can change really quickly in politics, right?
Oh, sure, they can, yeah. And, you know, he's done a very effective job marketing, you know, with selling himself and selling his ideas, selling his approach. And voters right now, I think, are just getting on the winning ticket. You know, there's that kind of feeling right now about DeSantis. And, you know, Charlie Crist, a very familiar face in Florida. I mean, it's that kind of retread feeling that you've seen Chris before and you've seen his policies. And he didn't really excite voters this time around. There were a lot of huge issues in play here. This is not a question of, you know, do you want Coke or Pepsi? You're going to get a very different government from Republicans. And a lot of these issues that Democrats have been, you know, raising alarms about where the Republicans may go are indeed issues that we're going to see, you know, transformed into policies going forward. You're going to see some stricter abortion limits in this state. There's no doubt about that coming forward. You're going to see a very different kind of approach to education and schools. And these were things that, and the whole, you know, culture war issues, you know, these, how LGBTQ people are going to be treated in Florida going forward. That's going to change under Florida Republicans going over the next 4 years. But, you know, at this point, Floridians seem to be convinced that DeSantis is the guy. And of course, DeSantis probably in 2 years, well, actually less than that, he's going to be heading to Iowa for, you know, various, you know, meet and greets out there in advance of the primary season of 2024. So, you know, how DeSantis plays on the national stage is still going to be a question. But right now, he's the hot thing right now for Republicans. And that feeling that is out there nationally for him is certainly reflected in this state, where he's, you know, his popularity seems to be at a peak right now, and he's capitalizing on it.
And that point you made about Charlie Crist being a retread, I think, is kind of important. You know, the Democrats have not put up real electrifying candidates. I think Crist, Democrats like him, but he's not, you know, a super inspiring sort of, like, people just not, you know, an Obama-like candidate where people just gravitate to him. You know, he's been around a long time, a Republican and independent, and now a Democrat. I talked to a voter yesterday who said, I don't think he was a very good candidate. He just is sort of old news, in my opinion. And this was a Democratic voter who was just very discouraged and thought Florida is no longer a swing state. So I think that candidates do matter, and the candidates that Democrats put up matter in a state like Florida. You know, issues are one thing, but a lot of voters respond to personality, and you know, there's, you know, you could argue that DeSantis is maybe not the most charismatic candidate or the most inspiring speaker, you know, maybe not like a Trump or an Obama, something like that. But he does seem to have a personality that his voters respond to. And I think that's that sort of fighter personality where he'll go after people and just take on the media or whoever. And so I think, you know, voters are responding to DeSantis, not just on his policies, but based on his personality to some degree. And I'm not sure that Democrats have tapped into that.
And just the way that Florida is so often a bellwether for what's happening, I think the selection of Charlie Crist by Democrats, because remember, he did win, you know, overwhelmingly during the primary. So he was the favorite of Florida Democrats. But I think once again, it's sort of like the way Democrats nationally with Biden in the White House, they're going to have a similar question in 2024. Who else is there for Democrats in 2024? That's another question. So, the way Democrats settled on Charlie Crist in Florida in 2022 may give us a window in what's going to happen in 2024 when it comes to coming up with a White House nominee.
Yeah, and it's an interesting point because Democrats settled on Crist just like they settled on Biden, and Biden won because people were sick of Trump and the drama, but obviously they aren't sick of DeSantis in the same way, or didn't play for them the same way in Florida here. And speaking of Trump, it wouldn't be a Florida election these days without a Trump rally, and that's what we're getting this coming weekend as the former president travels to Miami to tout Rubio's campaign. Antonio, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that DeSantis isn't appearing at this rally with Trump and Rubio. He's having his own multiple rallies that day, including one in Sarasota. What do you make of the dueling Trump DeSantis rallies?
Well, I have a question for our listeners. Basically, who else can't wait for November 9th? Because that's really what this rally seems to be about, especially for Trump. Yeah, you know, look, Trump wants to be able to claim he helped his one-time nemesis Marco Rubio win a third term. And you kind of had an interesting presser with him a couple of days ago. Hope you talk a little bit about that. But, you know, and yes, Trump will be traveling to a bunch of states to gin up GOP chances of taking back the U.S. Senate and the House. And so Florida obviously is one of those places where Trump wants to deliver a closing argument for the midterm. So all of that is true. But of all of those rallies, including the one for Rubio, They all seem like they're opening acts for the main event, which is Trump's long-awaited, long-expected, long-teased presidential comeback campaign. And at the same time, the DeSantis-Crist election also has, like John just discussed, it almost has this air of preseason about it. As we've talked about, DeSantis is on the campaign trail, seems to be airing talking points and trial ballooning messages that seem more aimed at 2024 than just a re-election campaign against a rival who was a thing in the late 2000s. So, you know, it brings us to the dueling rallies on Sunday. And you can't help but look at them as a contest to see who's more macho in the state of Florida, who has more mojo, and who attracts a bigger crowd. But I will add one thing that I will be considering at this rally. That's Marco Rubio. I mean, what's his role here? Is he a beneficiary, or is he also going to be a political benefactor? And what I mean by that is Miami-Dade and its Republican Hispanic base, that's been Rubio's machine. But Trump also can stake his own claim there. He is deeply well-liked by the growing base of Hispanic evangelicals, in addition to the anti-communist Cuban Americans. And in fact, he's the only presidential candidate ever endorsed by the Bay of Pigs Veterans Group. So clearly Trump, who won big with Cuban American and other South Florida Hispanics in 2020, wants that base in his corner going forward. But DeSantis, who was campaigning with Rubio just after the August 23rd primary, I'm sure he's also eyeing those voters for a potential, you know, GOP primary in the Sunshine State in 2024. So what will be Rubio's role? Power broker or bystander? Gentlemen, there's just so much to look forward to on November 9th.
And, you know, any Trump rally is always about Trump. And I think that's maybe the issue here is that, you know, for Rubio to come in and bring Trump in and have Trump, you know, kind of be the focus of the rally, Rubio seems okay with that. I think he sounds like you mentioned the presser that we had with him. He took a few questions after his event here in Sarasota on Tuesday. And I asked him, because obviously Trump and Rubio had some pretty tough words for each other during the 2016 presidential primary, where Trump called him Little Marco, and Rubio responded by making fun of his spray tan and saying that he had small hands. And you know what they say about men with small hands, basically making a reference to, the size of his,
it's a family podcast, Zach.
Yeah, exactly. Podcast. I won't go there. I don't want to get censored by the FEC, but, it was an ugly primary, and they both went there and they both got down in the dirt. And then Since then, Rubio has sort of made peace with Trump, but it has seemed like an uneasy peace at times. He voted to certify the 2020 election, which Trump continues to say was falsely say was stolen, and really has made that the center of all of his political arguments. And he keeps saying it at all these rallies, and I'm sure he's going to say it at this rally with Rubio this weekend. So it's interesting that Rubio, who voted to certify the election, would allow somebody to come on stage with him and say the election was a farce. It just shows that Rubio wants to get the MAGA base on his side. He doesn't want to be an outsider on that sense. You've seen what's happened to folks who have crossed Trump, and Rubio doesn't want that. So, you know, and also obviously Trump brings a lot of enthusiasm within the Republican Party, and Rubio, I think there are still some Republicans who view him a little skeptically after his clashes with Trump. I asked Rubio about that. He said, look, why are you asking me about this? You know, people fight during, elections, and then they make up and for the good of the party. And he also said that when I asked him about being on stage with Trump and Trump making these claims about the election, he equivocated a bit and said, well, you know, I don't know about some of these states changing their election laws, which, you know, Trump has talked about, but he's also just talked about flat out fraud, which there's no evidence that has happened on a scale that would change the election. So he didn't really, he kind of talked around that. The bottom line is he seems very happy to have him. Whereas with DeSantis, for Trump to be the center of DeSantis's closing argument, it doesn't seem like something that he wants to stomach. He wants to be the center of his closing argument. He doesn't want to have to bend the knee here, especially if he wants to run for president. So it's a fascinating dynamic. We'll move on to our numbers here. John, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, Zach, I had a one, and only one is the number of Florida counties where Democrats have gained registered voters since the 2020 election. We've talked about how Republicans have gained in voter registration in the state, and the upcoming election will be the first in modern Florida history where there are more registered Republicans than Democrats, about 300,000 more. But compounding this rise in Republicans is a shrinkage in the number of Democrats. Democrats have lost about 350,000 registered voters since the election of President Biden in 2020. Now, Democrats have lost voters in every Florida county except one, and that's a surprising one. It's Sumter County, the home of the sprawling retirement community, the Villages, which is usually a magnet for Republican candidates because it is so Republican heavy. But Democrats there actually gained 192 voters. This is based on analysis by Matt Isbell, who's MCI Maps does a tremendous job in offering up data that makes sense of Florida political shifts. Sumter is the only county where Democrats showed even a measly sign of improvement. Now, Republicans actually registered more voters in Sumter and still vastly outnumber Democrats, but the 192 vote increase in Democrats, well, it's something, I guess. The Democratic Party people have tried to explain away some of these voter registration problems, pointing out that, as I'd mentioned earlier, that voter registration efforts were put on hold during the pandemic in 2020, and this year registration also was hurt by a lack of effort from the National Party. But the numbers are bleak for Democrats. They really do point to the state losing its longtime reputation as the nation's biggest swing state, which really goes back to the 2000 presidential election. And of course, 4 years ago, we had a unprecedented three statewide recounts for U.S. Senate, governor, and agriculture commissioner. So yeah, it's still possible within reason for Florida to be kind of a toss-up state. But Republicans seem to have really shifted Florida, though. The party has controlled state government this century, and now Republicans seem to have toppled the last holdout for Democrats, which had been the vote totals, voter registration totals, I should say, that always gave Democrats some spark and hope. Instead, it's getting redder and redder in Florida, and that has nothing to do with not wearing sunblock. Now you've got to wonder what the state is going to look like politically in another 2 years when the next presidential election is upon us, and likely we'll have Governor Ron DeSantis as a Republican White House contender. Just how Republican is it going to be?
I was not expecting the villages to be the one bright spot for Democrats and voter registration. That's a good analysis there. Antonio, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, I had 14, as in 14%. And that's the overall percentage of ballots cast in 2020 in Florida by voters ages 18 to 29, as recorded by exit polls. Now, the emergence of the under 30 voters has been a very anticipated electoral factor for years, in part because the millennial and younger generations are such a large demographic group, rivaling the baby boomers. And just like the baby boomers did, the under 30 population, I'd even say the under 40 population, has already had a dramatic cultural and social impact on the country. For example, would the use of smartphones be as widespread if not for them, or social media, or even the acronyms OMG, LOL, and WTF? But look, voter turnout by the under 30 crowd, at least in Florida, hasn't varied much as a percentage of the population in the past decade. Exit polling data says it's roughly been an average of 14.4% in elections going back to 2008. Now, I broke down these numbers with the help of Kevin Wagner, who's a pollster and a chair of the poli sci department over at Florida Atlantic University. And Kevin cautioned that these are exit polls, so the numbers could be off from reality by a little, but they are still largely on target and very telling. And the high water mark for under 30 voters was 17% of the overall vote in 2016, and the lowest is 10% 2 years later in 2018. That last 10% figure 4 years ago is especially intriguing because it followed the massacre at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland and the March for Our Lives movement. And yet under 30 voters at the polls are roughly just 1 in 10. Speaking of which, the prevailing wisdom is that younger voters lean Democratic. But these numbers raise questions about that. Yeah, the Democrat Barack Obama carried Florida in 2008 with under 30 voters accounting for 15% of the electorate, and in 2012 where they also accounted for 16% of voters. But then in 2016, with under 30 voters accounting for almost 20% of the electorate, Donald Trump beat Hillary Clinton in Florida, and then Trump won Florida in 2020 with younger voters accounting for a still notable 14% of the electorate. So more than a decade since millennials, the tip of the spear of this huge Democratic tsunami, got the right to vote, at least in Florida, they have yet to have a really major impact on an election, either in turnout or an outcome.
And I also wonder, with the COVID policies, a lot of young people didn't like some of those restrictions, and having those voters, it could be that some of those people have gravitated towards Republicans because of that. So who knows? Well, my number is 12.8, as in Republican Jeb Bush won the governor's race by 12.8 percentage points over Democrat Bill McBride. That's Jeb with an exclamation point. And that's the largest margin of victory in a governor's race in the last 30 years. Jeb also won by 10.6 percentage points in his first race in 1998. Those victories ushered in an era of Republican dominance in statewide elections in Florida after decades of Democratic rule. But Jeb's double-digit winning margins were a high watermark for Florida Republicans. Charlie Crist won his race for governor back when he was a Republican by 7.1 percentage points. And every governor's race since then, three in a row now, have been decided by a percentage point or less. Now there's a view that if DeSantis tops Trump's three-point margin of victory in 2020, it would be a pretty huge win. But it's worth noting that Jeb set the mark for what a Republican can do in the state. Does DeSantis have a chance at approaching a Jeb-level win? That seems unlikely, but polls have showed him leading Crist by double digits, so who knows? Either way, it says something that the big question isn't whether DeSantis will win, which seems like a pretty good bet right now, but by how much? That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll be back after the election with plenty to say about the results. Until then, we're out of here.